Welcome to another creepy episode of Nonproductive, right in the middle of our Geektoberfest celebration. That's right. Today's topic, cryptids. Actually, more specifically, the secret history of cryptids. Yes, that's right. All the world's finest scientists are here together in Nonpro Studios to talk to you about our favorite cryptids and where they came from and possibly where they're going. Not at all.
No.
I mean, we could try.
Yes.
I mean, I could speculate.
Yes. We have to reboot cryptids.
Please, let's do this. All right, we're talking about cryptids.
Mothman is eventually going to open up a shop on Etsy.
Ah, the Mothman edibles. Once they legalize the marijuana, edible marijuana in
Mothman silk textiles.
There we go. I like that.
None of this is usable.
Everything is awful.
Anyway.
For those of you who don't know, cryptids are these creatures that cryptozoologists believe exist or might exist, but there isn't a lot of hard evidence that they exist. We don't have them in zoos. They're not animals that are typically on display anywhere, or even animals that we have like consistent bodies of, where you might, on creatures that live deep in the woods, you'd find their remains. In the case of cryptids, there's only hints and suggestions, and often legends of their existence.
Cryptids can range from, like, the Loch Ness Monster, fantastical creatures like that, to, very recently, the giant squid was considered a cryptid.
Right. Would you be so kind as to allow me to go first?
Yes.
I've got a good one.
Okay.
It's one that we actually kind of started this conversation in pre-production with when we back in time when we first had the seed of this idea.
Back in time.
No, we're not doing it again.
Way back many centuries ago.
So how many of you are familiar with a creature known as Le Chupacabra?
I am.
Yeah.
With that pronunciation? Absolutely not.
It eats goats, right? That's a thing?
Or yeah, was it chickens?
No, it was goats.
Goats?
It was a goat sucker. Ah, yes, the chupacabra, as we've already discussed. The goat sucker, originally sighted in Puerto Rico. Do you know how ancient the myth of the chupacabra is?
I imagine it's some 100 years old.
100 years old, so around the turn of the century.
Probably.
Maybe about 50 years.
50,
yes, 60,
yes,
something
yes,
like that.
50, 60 years old. The first eyewitness sighting of this creature was 1995.
Oh, what? God.
That's right. 1995 in Puerto Rico.
Oh my God.
So I want you to like absorb that for a minute. I think most of you have heard of the chupacabra, the goat sucker. It's this creature, which I'm going to ask you guys to describe in a minute, that's allegedly, you know, haunts South American villages or towns. It takes their livestock. It kills them. Usually people are aware that it sucks the blood out. This creature that you are relatively familiar with is younger than many of the people listening to this podcast right now.
Wow. It's
younger than
1995.
By the way, when you say South American, you basically mean pretty much anywhere south of Oklahoma?
Yeah, basically south of the border, which doesn't even make sense since it was originally sighted in Puerto Rico, but that kind of deal. We think we know what it looks like or what it acts like, and we think it's been around forever, like some of the other cryptids we're going to bring up later in the show, but it's only been around since 1995. So at this point, for those of you who are familiar with it and in the studio with me, please describe the chupacabra for me. Anybody want to go first?
Sure.
All right, Al?
Isn't it supposed to be like some sort of a gangly, like, creature that's kind of wolf-like, but not really? And I think it does walk. I think it's bipedal, and it does have hair. And it's carnivorous, so like it has sharp teeth. That's about as much of it as I can think of.
All right. Anybody else have a description?
Definitely not bipedal. It's definitely got four legs. I think it's got like really long fangs and like huge eyes, like a bush willy, bush baby, something like that. Mm-hmm. Big eyes, you know, little tiny tail.
All right.
Scrappy fur, maybe no fur.
Sounds good.
I don't know.
That's pretty good, but completely wrong. It's actually, I understand why you say it walks on all fours. Because it's really more like a chimp or a monkey. It's bipedal, but it kind of walks
like
on its hands sometimes,
right?
But it's mostly hairless, and it's got huge needle like teeth and wings.
Oh, all right, sounds good, Pete. That was Pete's. James, do you have a description?
Oh boy, I have an image of some chicken-like thing in my head. It's nothing at all like what you guys are talking about. I don't know anything about this creature.
It's a giant chicken. That's what it is. That's what the Chupacabra is.
This is what's interesting.
I get the feeling Frank's leading us somewhere.
This is what's interesting to me about cryptids. In fact, many things that we did up until recently think were cryptids have been actually proven to exist. I do believe, I'm not 100% about this, but in addition to the giant squid, somewhat less recently, but more amazingly, gorillas. Certain varieties of gorillas that were supposed to exist in Africa were rumored to be legendary beasts that don't actually exist until, you know, a century or so or centuries ago. People found them and actually brought them out into quote unquote civilization and was able to document their existence. So what I think the cool thing about cryptids are is that a couple different things. One, you never quite know whether or not the thing you're talking about is a real living creature that for whatever reason we just haven't seen up until recently, right? And the other thing is that so much of it is informed by rumor and gossip.
Mm-hmm.
So all of you just described the Chupacabra for me, and there wasn't a lot of overlap. Certainly not with James's chicken thing.
No.
Right? Yeah. But you guys couldn't even decide whether or not it was quadruped or a biped. And then eventually Pete threw out the, well, it's, you know, it has that gangly ape-like walk where it could go from 4 feet to two. Well, how about
James
this?
James and I actually agreed that it had wings.
Yeah, so. And you two agreed that it had wings. There is similar. So here's the interesting thing. In 95, back in 1995, the creature was often described much more like what you would think of as an alien, or specifically a green alien. Big bug eyes, covered with scales, very reptilian, bipedal, right? And it had horns and spines all the way, like, on its, like, I guess, its spine. Like these bristly
spikes
that come out of its back.
Yeah.
So that's the initial description for the Chupacabra.
Wow.
And it's weird how it's sort of evolved with time, and there are probably good reasons for it. So it's an interesting monster. It's fits perfectly in urban legend, because in modern urban legend, I would say, because you don't have to, you know, attribute a lot of people death to it, which is going to be a hard thing to cover up. If people are dying to any creature, you know, Bigfoot starts smashing more skulls in, we would be on the look for Bigfoot. But because this thing is just killing farm animals, oh well, it doesn't really matter as much. So it fits in really good. It's kind of a popular thing. It fits into the vampire mythos because it's drinking blood. People are legitimately afraid of it. And what's really cool about it is the sightings have moved. So it started in 95 in Puerto Rico, but there have been sightings as far up as Maine now.
What?
There are sightings in Russia. Newspapers have published first Chupacabra sighting in Russia, like as a actual news story.
Sheesh.
Like the same way we post the first West Nile case in New Jersey.
Exactly. Or killer bees are making their way up north or something like that. It seems like it's a legitimate invasive pest problem.
Mm-hmm.
It seems less legitimate when you think about the way it was initially described as this bipedal reptile creature, because that seems less likely. Mm-hmm. But when you start giving it more canine features, putting it on all fours, giving it fur, giving it sharp teeth, suddenly it seems like it's a real creature that can exist. And there's one more thing that's really cool about this. You all have heard of the Chupacabra.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Why do you think it is that you've heard of it? Is it because they're an invasive species and they're moving north? Or could there be a more pop cultural reason?
Oh, I definitely think it's pop culture because
it's non-productive. It would be
very first time I heard of the Chupacabra was on a Scooby-Doo show when I was like 7.
Yeah, and obviously big monsters eventually get people, like people who do Monsters of the Week shows eventually want to focus on them.
I seem to remember mention of the Chupacabra in an adult version of Scooby-Doo, The X-Files.
That's right. So, in The X-Files, there's an episode called...
It's usually just a guy in the mask. It's basically the same show.
Not at all. They're often monsters. In The X-Files, in an episode called El Mundo Gira, which apparently translates to As the World Turns.
Oh, God.
The agents go to investigate a outbreak of death and destruction hitting like an illegal immigrant worker camp. where people are picking vegetables and fruits and what have you, and these people are dying off. It's actually part of the reason, possibly, why we thought that the chupacabra is a Mexican creature as opposed to a Puerto Rican creature, because we've associated it with this. And if you don't believe me that one TV show can make such a lasting impact, guess when that show aired?
When?
1997. First chupacabra sighting was 1995.
Wow.
The X-Files episode that barely focused on the creature was 1997. It went into the zeitgeist probably at that point. And it's interesting, if you watch that episode, spoiler alert, it's not a monster that's killing everybody necessarily.
Or is it, Frank?
It is, in fact, a fungus infection.
Oh.
That's killing off the people in this camp.
Sometimes fungi can be monsters, Frank.
And actually, that is very true, because if you believe what most people have been reporting most recently, most biologists who are trying to investigate this phenomenon believe, and one of the reasons why we see a more canine version of the chupacabra in modern day, which is weird to say modern day since we're talking about something from 1995, is because a lot of people believe that these are coyotes and other like wild dogs that are affected with a kind of mange brought upon by a fungal infection.
So their
fur falls out, their teeth are more prominent, their claws are more prominent, they look more sickly, and they are in fact sick. Huh. And they the idea is that they're killing animals or even attacking animals and not feeding on them because they're not good enough. They're not strong enough to actually kill the creature. The animal gets away and eventually dies with circulatory failure.
Bleeds out.
Huh.
So that's chupacabra. Crazy.
Wow. You know, that actually makes a lot of sense. Generally speaking, any animal, when you take the fur off, looks really scary.
Mm-hmm. At this point, I would like to point you over to hairless bears.
Oh, God. Those are so creepy.
Oh, my God. Yeah. They're the worst.
They're the best, in my opinion. So that was like a quick and easy one. It was a little less quick than I thought it was. But there is another layer to this. I was very excited about the X-Files, and because I'm a big X-Files fan back in the day. But there is a book called Tracking the Chupacabra, written by Benjamin Radford. And in this book, he did a little bit of research and interviews with the first woman who actually sighted the chupacabra. Again, 1995, so it's not as if we have like these vague records of things. And apparently, in her initial description, she was describing a creature that was a lot like Syl from the movie Species, which had come out like 2 weeks before she reported her sighting. Apparently, she had seen the movie and was using the movie as like part of her description. I don't know quite if she was using the movie to describe what she saw, or if afterwards she said, hey, you know what it really looks like? Better description.
It looks like the thing from that movie.
Yeah. And there's a lot of controversy around this. We don't know if this is true or not or what have you. But there are signs that point to the fact that she, in fact, was talking about the creature from Species,
you know what?
And actually believed the things happening in the movie were somehow based on reality.
I can see that. In a lot of ways, Natasha Henstridge looks like a mangy coyote.
Jesus.
Ba-da-ba-ba.
Take that. And take over. Who has another monster to share with us? The secret origins of cryptids.
No, I could go for one.
All right, Al.
Mine's a little bit more based in reality than legendary creatures. It is the alligators that live in the sewers of New York.
Okay. I've heard the legends.
A lot of people have the legends that like, there was a time when alligators made great pets or whatever it was, and then people would get too big, so like, you know, children or teenagers would flush them down the toilets into the New York's sewer system, and then they just grew into eventually having these this entire colony beneath beneath New York.
Right.
And you could,
I've seen Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, but no.
Yeah. And you could eventually at some point be, you know, go down the sewers or a sewer worker or something, all of a sudden could be attacked by an alligator, like, oh my God, they're like 8 feet, 12 feet long, holy crap. Which is an interesting, it's an interesting sort of cryptid because alligators are real. They exist.
That's right.
It's not like they never attacked people. They have.
Yeah, right. Alligators are real.
Water dragons. Water lions. Is that what they're referred to?
Yes, in Game of Thrones.
Whatever.
Jeez. But anyway, but New York, for whatever reason, people just believe there's alligators there.
Right. It's a persistent urban legend.
Yeah. And it's founded with some validity, but it's not because of what people continuously say the urban legend is, where people were like, oh, no, they had all these pets, and then they just...
Yeah, because, first of all, that seems really ridiculous. That yeah. Even, like, on even in the 1930s Coney Island, that you would win alligators as prizes seems almost too crazy for our grandparents.
And then that they would have to grow too big? I mean, let's be honest. I mean, how big... before an alligator can't be flushed down the toilet. Yeah. You know what I mean?
What's like, the perfect ratio?
Like, once it gets big, too big to flush down a toilet, like, toilet holes are not that big. You would think at that point, the alligator is still a manageable size. Yeah, yeah. I've
still,
seen an
still
alligator.
Still the size of your dog.
And that's not how, like, toilets work. They don't, like, empty immediately into freshwater basins.
Frank, Nemo told me all toilets lead to the ocean.
Oh, that's true.
But there's a long path before
there's
it.
Which
explains the beaches of Delaware.
But yeah, I mean, it's all founded in, like, one case back in 1935 of New York where there was an alligator in the New York sewers. There was one singular alligator that this is. We're going back some 80 years about to when this incident happened. Huh. And it's the only one that's really reported or really said anything about. And people just assumed, well, if there's one, there's got to be more.
That's sticking power.
Are we talking alligators or rumors?
We're talking about alligators.
How did that happen? Where did that alligator come from?
I don't think they... It's zoo circus or something like that. They're not really sure how it got there.
I mean, it's possible it was just being kept as an exotic pet. I mean,
and then it got too big and someone flushed it.
Yeah,
but we still see it a lot, though. People release their exotic pets all the time.
Somebody tried to smuggle it into the country. And
on that note, people released a bunch of ferrets into, like, Beijing and China, and now they're about as common there as squirrels are here. It's actually kind of nuts. They're exotic there.
Yeah.
That's why in China they're called long squirrels.
They're actually called long rats. That's what the word actually translates to. That's what it's really funny.
Squirrel is actually American for rat.
Yes.
Yeah, totally.
So
one instance.
Not knowing where one alligator or crocodile, whatever it was, came from is a lot different than saying the colony of these creatures that exist.
And there are still people that believe it. They perform studies, they send cameras down there to try and find nests. Sewer workers and they have consistently said from that point forward, it's like, no, I've been down there. I have to wear hazmat suits to work down there. Mm-hmm. The idea that something, I mean, obviously things do live down there, but the idea of that large an amount of creatures would be able to survive there just isn't physically possible.
Mm.
But it's so interesting because it happened one time so long ago and no one came with a good explanation for it. People hold on to that. So much so, there's still instances where people's exotic pets will get out. And this was actually what happened. This is going back maybe less than 10 years, where an alligator had escaped, and then a woman found it in her kitchen and was like, oh my God, there's an alligator in my kitchen. Called the police. They didn't really believe her or whatever it was. Like, no, it's here. It's here. And that sort of all of a sudden revitalized it, saying, oh my God, no, it must have come out of her sewer system or out of her toilet.
It wasn't the neighbor who let go of their alligator.
Yeah, it couldn't have been that. No, it was a sewer gator. Mm-hmm. Like, even though it was clearly found out later that it was just an escaped exotic pet and that it had nothing to do with that, but people just married themselves to that idea that, no, it lives underneath all of us. They're there. They're just trying to keep it under wraps because they don't want us to be scared of them.
That reminds me of what people used to think of flies, really. That they would just come out from spontaneous... generation. But in reality, it was maggots were produced by spontaneous generation. And then it was just like, oh, flies are landing on meat and laying their eggs.
It was the normal life cycle.
Yeah.
Rotten meat turned to maggots, which turns into flies.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. As opposed to, the normal source of these alligators is the next door neighbor that has alligators.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. As pets. And like you guys have been saying, they do, exotic pets do get out. That's the reason why. So we talk about the urban legend of the sewer gators, but there is the urban reality of the Florida pythons, which are like, Florida is overrun by these these South American animals that have been introduced as escaped pests.
Yeah,
that's a slight exaggeration. They're not really overrun, but they are becoming a nuisance population.
Well, it depends on how you mean by overrun. I'm not saying that literally when you open up your cabinet to get your Cheerios, it fall out. But the point where like it's damaging their their ecosystem because there's so many of them. Yeah. They're overrun in that.
I would say Florida is overrun by little lizards. It's invaded by pythons.
All right. That was a good one. Who wants to go next?
So I have a classic.
All right.
I have none other than, or I've chosen none other than Sasquatch or Bigfoot.
All right.
Which one?
They are the same.
What?
Sasquatch and Bigfoot are the name for a similar creature that is not the same for the Yeti and the Abominable Snowman, which are different creatures. Bigfoot is actually a popularized term, but it originated in Australia. Sasquatch was one of the first terms for the primeval man. But the reality is the Bigfoot myth exists long before the
monster
term
truck.
How much does it predate the monster truck?
A lot.
At least 20 years, scientists have discovered.
No, there's been the myth of primeval man, this missing link myth, is one of those kind of interesting myths because it exists kind of like dragons. Every major culture in America, except for Antarctic culture, has an early man sort of sighting story or mythos.
So how do we define this creature? Because like I've never, in my head, I never crossed Bigfoot with caveman, right?
So it's not caveman. It's kind of like this out of time. Early hominid monster, right?
Like the missing link, like you said.
Exactly.
A hairy man.
Yeah. So a lot of, a lot of stories of Bigfoot, a lot of people try to say, maybe Bigfoot is a Giantopithecus, which was kind of like a missing link, but Giantopithecus wouldn't have been a hominid. Right,
that's like a cave ape, right?
Yeah, it was like a cave ape.
It's a giant ape.
Yeah, it didn't have like a proper buttocks. It wouldn't. It wouldn't have fit.
Sample that.
People. It wouldn't have fit, the correct early hominid kind of description that we get when we think of the hairy man,
right.
the Bigfoot. Mm-hmm. The Bigfoot doesn't have like a super like secret history to it. I mean, Bigfoot is made up of the Bigfoot myth is made up of like lots of different sightings, most of which people kind of go around and determine are just misidentification or hoaxes. I think probably what's so much more interesting about Bigfoot is that despite it being this prevalent thing in culture, since culture kind of existed, at how popular it has become now, right? So Bigfoot is the topic of multiple shows on Discovery and History Channel.
This is just disgusting to me.
It is. It is.
Because the ones on the History Channel are not dealing with like the history of original native people, right? Or like something like that, like the mythology of those native peoples. It's
we go out there and hunt us a Sasquatch.
That's right. Find him.
Those were perfect New England accents. And yes, that is what they're about, and they're annoying. Right.
But Bigfoot has become more popular so than ever on the age of the internet. And the most interesting case study of that was actually in 2014 with Rick Dyer. Rick Dyer basically was a creature expert from San Antonio, Texas, who in September 2012 said that he had found DNA of the missing link.
Okay.
And
it sounds really suspect.
He produced an entire kind of, I don't want to say documentary, but kind of like guerrilla marketing campaign to find Bigfoot and produce a body. He had a special effects artist by the name of Chris Russell of Twisted Toy Box manufactured a prop Bigfoot, which they dubbed Hank. This hoax, or this thing lasted from mid-2014 till the end of 2014, probably about 6 months. And they're estimated to... They admittedly, at the end, had to admit it was a hoax, but they're
estimated... So this was, like, at no point was... So this was a... This is awkwardly described.
This was a big hoax they had set up. It was a big marketing hoax, but they had set up with the idea to use this hoax to make money, and they estimated that they made somewhere around $60,000 off of this kind of online marketing Bigfoot hoax, which I'm assuming was enough to offset their costs of creating this.
Yeah, but I don't know. I don't even know if you get sued for that. It depends on what you're saying.
I mean, they didn't really... So there were no legal action was brought against them. They didn't really do anything wrong. So they never...
illegal.
What did they do?
They didn't do anything truly illegal. They just led people to believe that they had something. And because of that, they were able to gain money off of things like website hits, marketing for produced video documentaries. Basically, they created content that brought people to the site, but based on Bigfoot. I think there were some donations and things like that. But since people gave it willingly and they had like the proper legal text in there to be like, you know, in the fine print, but nobody
read it.
Read that.
Yep.
So, and that was really interesting. And I think not necessarily that the popular culture of Bigfoot is a secret, but to say that Bigfoot has become more popular in the current zeitgeist is interesting. It kind of reminds me of the chupacabra in the sense that, like, since the dawn of social media, since the dawn of us being able to snap photos at everything, all of a sudden, you know, well, everybody saw Bigfoot.
Yeah, this seems like it would be less likely of a time to start seeing sightings of monsters you can't document, since we document every minute of our lives. Yeah, it's interesting. And one of the things that I've always heard people complain the most about Bigfoot, and any kind of, like, allegedly common cryptid, is why don't you find more bodies? And that's a good argument, but you don't typically find a lot of animal bodies in the woods necessarily, is the counter argument, especially for like large predators. Yeah. But the whole thing is odd to me. I think the reason why I'm always suspicious about Bigfoot is that one of the most legendary cryptids that turned out to be real was very similar to Bigfoot. You're talking about these gorillas. So why not, maybe?
I mean, so they talk about how early documented sightings in the 1800s were these large form gorillas. One sighting was a group of actually primal people living on an island that they said they had found, like, an early man. They're really just a culture who had not, you know, who had just been removed.
That's an interesting slip. So, basically, we are now picturing Harry and the Hendersons' Bigfoot. So when we look at early sightings of things that were Bigfoot, they were like, no, these are early men. I'm like, oh, well, that's not what we think Bigfoot is. That's just a person. That's just a naked person. That's not the same thing.
I want to point out that, I mean, on that note, all the Yeti stories, that actually turned out to be a real thing. It just was a bear that nobody had ever seen before. Like, somebody actually found, like, a big chunk of, like, a corpse, and they're like, holy cow, it's the Yeti, oh my god. And they brought it back, and they tested it, and they were like, this is a bear, but it's an entirely new species of bear that no one has ever found before. So it's like, it was a totally new species.
But I think what's tough with things like that is, like, I guess how far off from, like, what we see do they actually end up? So when they found that bear species, like, I mean, it was a new species of bear, but, like, if you look at the drawing of a Yeti, and then if you look at that species of bear they found, you're like, no, that's a bear.
Right. And then you look at the
oh, no, we just didn't catch the Yeti. And it just happens to be this new bear.
You look at the invasive species that we do know exist, like the pythons in Florida, and then you compare it up to the story of alligator colonies that live in the sewers exclusively. Ridiculous. Or even the chupacabra, which starts off like, is this an invasive species of possibly reptile men or vicious dog creatures that suck blood? No, it's an invasive case of mange.
That's stupid. Yeah. Everybody knows that the lizard men only stay underneath the surface of the earth. That's true. They never come out.
You know, on that note, that leads into my cryptid actually really well, is the difference of, is this really what you were looking for? You know, like, on a technical sense, you can say you found the Yeti because you did find a new species. It just kind of wasn't what you thought it was going to be. I picked the jackalope, which is, you know, something everybody's pretty familiar with, I think, you know.
Mostly for the work of Dave Coulier.
I want to say, I don't think there is a single more debunked cryptid out there than the jackalope, right?
It's pretty ridiculous. It's a
jackrabbit with antlers, right?
Right, with deer antlers.
With deer antlers. And
antelope antlers.
Antelope antlers.
Oh, yeah. Right. Well, antelope are a type of deer. I'm not correcting you. I'm refining the statement.
It's a very specific kind of thing. And as it turns out, it's actually really, really based on reality. The original myth of the jackalope spread in the early 1900s with settlers off in the West, you know. And people would say that they had seen jackrabbits with horns and antlers sprouting from their head. And then there was the fake one that got made... I cannot quite remember the name of the fellow that made it. But
Jimmy Jackalope, probably. Maybe. But it was like a taxidermy thing.
Yeah, me sewed up a fake taxidermy thing, and everybody thought it was real for a while, and then it got debunked. But as it turns out, it was actually completely true. People were seeing rabbits with horns. That's a real thing. It's called Shope's papillomavirus, and it actually causes rabbits to grow these keratinous bone spurs all over their face and head. And they don't look anything like antlers, but they certainly look like horns or like small antlers, like when they're first starting to grow.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll grow huge, these big spurs. And if you were out shooting rabbits and you saw a rabbit with horns, you'd come back and describe it and say, holy cannoli, I just saw a rabbit with antlers and or horns. And someone would draw it with what they heard, horns, and they draw antlers.
And that is the fish story, right?
Yeah.
You talk about a fish that you caught, it was this big, and then it becomes that big, and then it becomes
But I mean, the story giant. Itself might have just been mistranslated or misunderstood, but it's completely based in reality. There's actually, and like, the research done on these things actually seriously helped papillomavirus, and there's been a lot of research done on these particular rabbits. They're actually kind of a big deal. But rabbits with horns, actually totally a real thing.
Yeah. That's really interesting. But if you showed anybody, like a modern cryptid hunter, a rabbit with horns, and told them that this is what you're looking for, they'd
be
probably
kind of
not,
disappointed.
Yeah, they'd be, yeah. Interesting. Very interesting. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think with all our examples, we have shown how that a lot of times cryptids are just regular old creatures with sometimes they have very deep mythological roots, sometimes they have urban legend roots, but effectively, a lot of times you could just gonna explain it away for, oh, Pete, you didn't do yours. Why don't you go?
All right. We can do that. Well, I wanted to talk about something kind of near and dear to my heart, the Jersey Devil.
Oh, of course.
Which we were talking about last week, because the Jersey Devil is really a fascinating cryptid, fascinating story.
Oh, great.
There's so many great stories around it. You all know what the Jersey Devil looks like?
No.
Jersey Devil is a creature from the...
As I slowly pot down all the mics but Pete's and the mood music cues up.
Jersey Devil is said to inhabit the Pine Barrens in southern New Jersey. For those of you who don't know the Pine Barrens, it's this huge stretch of land about the size of Rhode Island. Actually, a bit bigger than Rhode Island. In the middle of South Jersey, where almost nobody lives, I don't believe it's technically a desert, but it's filled with very sandy soil, and pretty much the only stuff that grows there are these scrub pines. It's a very strange, eerie landscape, especially when you combine it with the fact that it's this giant empty area smack dab in the middle of the most densely populated state in the country. And legend has it that there is a creature out there called the Jersey Devil that lives in this barren, empty area. And it's said most common description is it's a like a kangaroo-like creature almost with hooves and the head of a goat or a collie dog and the face of a horse with big leathery bat wings and short forearms that end in claws.
You know, what kills me about that is, like, head of a goat, face of a horse.
Yeah, that's always really confusing. Yeah. How do you picture that?
This kangaroo-like body with this. Like, it doesn't seem to fit anywhere in time. Kangaroo-like body. Like, so far, everything you're describing, to me, sings of, like, early settlers of America, right? Until you get to kangaroo-like body, and I'm like, how would you even... Why would you casually reference a kangaroo? You know, like, right? Well, it's so weird.
The kangaroo seems to be a relatively recent addition to the description.
Almost as if they're using it to describe, like, like early woodcuts or something like that. Yeah. Like, hey, that looked like
which
a-
actually, we'll get into that later on.
Oh, all right.
But, yeah, one of the key things to this is that it's always said to move extremely quickly. So it's very hard to get a good look at the creature. And it's most commonly recognized by the blood-curdling scream. Or howl. No, that was a passing car, Frank. Oh, calm down. Okay. Now, there's a lot of different stories about the origins of the Jersey Devil. I got everything from a gypsy curse to God wreaking vengeance on a man for insulting a reverend, to witches mating with Satan himself.
Okay. That one's intense.
Yeah.
Yeah, a little bit.
Let's do a little bit more about that one.
The most popular story by far, though, holds that the devil was born at Leeds Point, a marshy tract of land just north of Atlantic City, with its northern shore along the Great Bay. It's said that Mother Leeds had 12 children, and after finding she was pregnant for the 13th time, she said, "Let the devil take this one." In 1735, Mother Leeds was in labor on a stormy night while her friends gathered around her. She gave birth, and at first the child seemed perfectly normal, but as the room looked on, it quickly changed to an unholy creature with hooves, a goat's head, bat wings, and a forked tail. Growling and screaming, it killed the midwife and then flew up the chimney, circling the village and heading off into the pines. From that point on, the legend becomes a bit more convoluted, contradictory. For about 5 years, the devil terrorized the pines, the area of southern New Jersey. Supposedly, it's killed as many as 12 children during that time.
Wow.
Either snatching them up when they wandered away from their homes, or even breaking into houses and taking sleeping children out of their beds. It got to be so bad that in 1740, a clergyman was summoned, and he performed an exorcism that was supposed to banish the devil for 100 years. And according to that story, it worked even better than that, and the devil wasn't seen again until 1890.
Interesting.
Yeah. This is where the contradictions come into play, because, you know, there's lots of other sightings that happened during that time. Sometime in the early 19th century, while he was preparing for one of his naval campaigns against the Barbary pirates, Commodore Stephen Decatur of the U.S. Navy was inspecting the Hanover Iron Works in South Jersey, which are responsible for producing the cannonballs. While testing the guns, none other than the Jersey Devil himself appeared downrange.
Sights right on this. Yep. Oh my God, it's the devil.
Well, he was just flapping lazily across the line of fire, and Decatur himself grabbed the cannon and took aim, fired off a shot, and hit the Jersey Devil square in the midsection.
No.
Now, all those assembled were impressed, but then shocked when the devil took absolutely no notice of that and just kept flying lazily across the range of fire with a giant cannonball hole clear through its midsection.
This is such a specific thing for... Wow.
So there's a lot of... Oh, that was very impressive. You shot the devil.
There's a lot of really specific historical stories featuring historic figures. It's well known to people that are interested in New Jersey history that Joseph Bonaparte, the brother of Napoleon, he was the former king of Naples, Sicily, and Spain, thanks to his brother, of course. But he lived in Bordentown, New Jersey, during his self-imposed exile between 1817 and 1832. Supposedly, he frequently encountered the Jersey Devil while he was out hunting.
Really? Frequently?
Yes. It was a common sight.
This jerk is in the, in the weeds again, God.
One of my favorite stories.
My tomatoes.
In 1701, years before the Jersey Devil was born, Captain Kidd, the famous pirate, is said to have buried some of his treasure in along the Barrier Islands that separate the bays from the Atlantic Ocean along the Jersey shore. Mm-hmm. And according to legend, he beheaded one of his crew and buried him with the treasure so that his ghost would guard the treasure for all eternity. Apparently, Captain Kidd was very good at hiding treasure, almost as good as he was at stealing it, because no one ever came looking for the treasure. And the ghost is said to have become very lonely. So he made friends with the Jersey Devil. And that's why, to this day, people say that if you go to the right beach at the right time of night, you can see the Jersey Devil walking along the shore with a headless ghost pirate.
I love that the Jersey Devil is so chill in these stories. He gets shot. He's like, yo. he hangs out with Napoleon's brother a lot. He goes, hey, it's me again. What do you want? And then he's just chilling on the beach with a headless pirate.
All right.
Go ahead.
Can I say something?
Sure.
And I've had a problem with the Jersey Devil, and it's not... It's not like...
What's your problem with the Jersey Devil?
And it's not like the stories or anything like that. It's... Why do we, in New Jersey, literally have to have the spawn of Satan as our cryptid? Right? So, like, other places, they get, like, alien dinosaurs. Monsters and dinosaurs and things like that. Nope. Pine Barrens of New Jersey, you guys are crazy. Literally the spawn of Satan. I'm just saying, I think...
Might not have been the spawn of Satan. It might have been just some dude that was cursed by a gypsy.
Yeah. Could have been a lesser demon. That's one of the possibles. All right. Yeah. But I'm just saying,
gypsies
like...
Gypsies aren't demons, dude. Fucking racist. Jeez.
One of the lesser... No. You know what I'm saying? Like, I feel like the Jersey Devil, as fun as it is, like, as an internal thing, right, that we enjoy as New Jerseyans... I just feel like it's a very intense...
But he's a cool devil. He's the devil that sits on the dunes and looks out to sea looking for shipwrecks to laugh at.
I don't also understand how it sits. I mean, with the short stubbies.
Oh, the foot just folds in a different way.
But yeah.
All right. So it is odd that the Jersey Devil is such a satanic creature and still we can identify it as a cryptid.
It's also interesting that we have like the cartoony version of the devil and the horrible bloodthirsty beast
right
that shows up that yeah. murders midwives
right
you know as someone who's not from New Jersey and hadn't really ever been to New Jersey until like a year and a half ago, I can say I actually didn't really know that it was literally a devil until you guys told me that. I'd heard of the Jersey Devil before, like, you know, you see in pop culture. I saw it in a cartoon when I was a kid, and
probably Scooby-Doo, actually.
No, actually, American Dragon, Jake Long.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
That's a very specific reference, but I thought that the Jersey Devil was facetious, like it was called a devil, but it, you know, like
a Tasmanian devil.
Like a Tasmanian devil, yeah, like it was called that, but I didn't realize they actually meant the Jersey Devil is satanic. I had no idea. I thought that
many
it was just
of the
called
myths
that.
Are, in fact, that he is a cursed, evil thing.
Yeah. I had no idea.
All of this stuff was just passed down as folklore and everything, but if you actually try to research it, you won't find any mention of the Jersey Devil until the, like in newspapers or almanacs or anything like that, until the early 20th century.
Really?
Correct.
Because all the stories you just mentioned, at least some of them, I've heard as if they were stories from the period. From
that people have told,
yeah,
passed down the generations. Right. And we don't really have any evidence to support that that was true. We just have word of mouth.
Oh my goodness.
So maybe there were stories being told of the Jersey Devil. Maybe there was stories being told that got evolved into the Jersey Devil eventually. But we know that there was enough of a story about the Jersey Devil for there to be what the genesis of what became known as Phenomenal Week in 1909. And that was a rash of sightings from January 18th to January 22nd, where the Jersey Devil just ran rampant all across New Jersey from the southern, from Cape May up to High Point, the entire length and breadth of the state, and even into Pennsylvania. It was said to attack livestock, to pester people on their at their houses. There was even the story where the Jersey Devil attacked a trolley car, which was taken seriously enough that the authorities in Trenton and New Brunswick posted armed guards on the trolleys.
God.
In case the Jersey Devil attacked again, which is a lot like creepy clowns right now.
Right.
And there were rewards offered by the Philadelphia Zoo for the capture, but nothing really materialized. Except for something found by a man named Norman Jeffries. Now, Norman Jeffries was the publicist for Philadelphia's Arch Street Museum, and he was relatively well known as a hoaxer.
No.
Yep. Yep. And he and the museum's owner apparently produced a Jersey Devil and marketed it.
Oh no!
Apparently, what they did, they hired an animal trainer who was a friend of Jeffrey's, and they purchased a kangaroo from a traveling circus.
Oh.
And they attached claws and fake bat wings onto it with glue.
Oh no!
And declared to the public that they had caught the devil and charged admission to see it. And they got a few months worth out of this before admitting that it was a hoax.
That's incredible.
Now, there's some debate because they do admit to having planted fake newspaper stories in order to publicize it.
But how far back?
But we're not. Nobody's sure how far back it was. And apparently, the stories of the Trenton, New Brunswick posting armed guards were real.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't know about that. But that's not to say that the story of the Jersey Devil has absolutely no basis in reality. Because this is where I think it gets really interesting. Okay, the Pine Barrens I've described before, very spooky. And it's very easy to see how the legend of a Jersey Devil could arise there.
Right.
Historically speaking, the area was associated with monsters long before the term Jersey Devil was coined. The Lenape tribes, the native tribes in the area, called the area Popuessing. I'm probably mispronouncing that. But Popuessing, something like that, meaning the place of the dragon. And then later on, the first European explorers there named the area Drake Kill. Drake being the word for dragon, and kill being the Dutch term for a body of water. But what I find the most interesting theory has been posited by Dr. Brian Regal of Keene University. And it involves Quakers, heresy, almanac wars, a man who defied death, and Benjamin Franklin.
Okay.
Sounds like a good story to me.
Ready for this one?
Yeah, okay. I'm up for it.
Among the first European settlers in New Jersey, were the Society of Friends, also known as the Quakers, also known as the Oatmeal People. Okay. And they were a fiercely devout and equally fiercely independent Christian group. Now, among their number was a man by the name of Daniel Leeds, who lived between 1651 and 1720, and from whom Leeds Point gets its name. Among his many civic and business accomplishments, Daniel Leeds published a very successful almanac, which, like all such publications, included various predictions and forecasts for weather, moon phases, and seasons based on historical and astronomical observations. Mm-hmm. Now, the leaders of his Quaker community, however, felt that his attempts to predict the motions of the heavens were a bit too pagan for their theological beliefs, and they publicly chastised him. Now, Mr. Leeds not only refused to recant or cease publication of his almanac, but he proceeded to publish several books espousing his own personal theological and cosmological views, including sections on angels, natural magic, astrology, and the behavior of devils. The Quakers regarded this as heresy, and Leeds became a pariah in the Quaker community, although his almanac remained popular outside the society. That's how the Leeds family first became associated with the devil. So, after that, the Leeds family, in the popular mindset of New Jersey, was seen as diabolic.
That's
and
that
evil.
Evil witch family.
Now, upon Daniel's death, the publication of the almanac fell to his son, Titian, who altered the masthead of the almanac to include the family crest. Family crest was a shield with three depictions of a wyvern, which the D&D players here will know is a two-legged dragon thing.
Yeah.
Not unlike the descriptions of the Jersey Devil. Particularly if you see the actual coat of arms. The stylized makes it look a lot like that. Now, this was one of the most popular almanacs that was being published currently in the Northern Colonies. And as such, it drew the attention of a novice publisher from Philadelphia named Benjamin Franklin.
Oh, okay.
Seeing the opportunity to gain a leg up on the competition, Franklin boldly predicted Titian's death in the very first issue of Poor Richard's Almanac. Now, Titian Leeds did not in fact die when Benjamin Franklin predicted that he would. However,
what a jerk.
Franklin went on to claim that, yes, he had indeed died, and the publication of his almanac was now taken over by a group of inferior publishers who were just using Leeds' name.
Benjamin Franklin was a troll.
Yes.
God.
This is 100% true. And Franklin never admitted the hoax. And when Titian finally did die 5 years later in 1738, Franklin congratulated the supposed usurpers for finally ending their charade.
That's awful.
So, yeah, interesting story on that. And that's how hoaxes and the devil eventually became entangled with this outcast family from the Jersey Pine Barrens. And probably through a long game of telephone across about 100 years, became what we now consider the Jersey Devil.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Now, as for what people actually see, the leading theory is that people are probably catching a quick glimpse of the Sandhill Crane.
I could see that.
Which is a particularly large and ugly bird. That does not, it's not very common down in South Jersey, but it has been known to show up from time to time. And it fits the vague description if you were to see it like at night and moving very quickly.
Right.
Particularly its spindly legs and large head compared to its body.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
So that's the Jersey Devil.
That's crazy.
Oh, very nice. Very cool.
It's a good story.
I think all of these are good stories, mm-hmm. and that's what makes cryptids so fun to think about and to try to figure out. And I actually think it's more interesting to quote, debunk them, end quote, than it is to just sort of roll your eyes and not think about them at all.
Mm-hmm.
It's a cool thing. So it is, of course, Geektoberfest, and as part of our terrible, awful, poorly thought out tradition, we are going to share some awful candy with everyone in the studio. Please join me, everyone, in grabbing one of these gross things, these dollar store candies that Big Papa P has provided, and we will talk to you
guys. This lovely orange taffy.
Yeah, it looks like orange taffy.
Well, it is orange.
But
I'm afraid
it's not orange. You don't have to take it, especially if you're sensitive stomachs or what have you. But what is this? What did you bring for us?
Well, it's as you can tell by the wrapper.
Right.
It's pumpkin spice taffy.
Oh,
no.
Oh,
all right.
Geez.
So it's a piece of taffy.
And Nate tapped out right now.
Yeah, Nate didn't even make it to her mouth. She's
yeah,
just
it is flat.
I would like to throw it out there that, unlike y'all, I love myself. So
this is a very distinct aroma of pumpkin spice. You
it
can't
is
miss it. And
intense.
There are little pumpkins on the wrappers, and it just looks like orange taffy. Let me try it.
I'm going to be tell you, I'm surprised. Not good.
Oh.
But the flavor is not as intense as that smell.
Yeah.
Yeah, the smell's
okay. Smell is very overpowering. The flavor is
kind of bland.
Yeah.
It smells like
bland.
Cinnamon.
Not good.
It's like extremely thick chai tea.
Oh, God.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
No, chai tea tastes better than this. I love chai tea.
I hate chai tea.
If we've excited your fancy with this tasting, you could find some probably in a dollar store.
Oh, my God.
And if we've... Oh, God, why did I do this before wrapping up the podcast?
Ugh.
And if we've excited your fancy by these wonderful cryptid stories, hey, why don't you subscribe to Nonproductive, follow us on social media, and look for us under your beds at night, because we're there, staring up.
Every night.
Waiting for you to notice. Us licking your hands.
I see dead people.
Good
some
night
of the time.
Good night, everybody. Good night, everybody.
He's choking. Help him. Come on.
This has been a Nonproductive Media presentation. Executive producer, Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Nonproductive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.